Good morning to everyone. First of all, don't be alarmed by the sore sheets. My wife and I have a deal. She makes more food than we need for Shabbos, and we eat the leftovers. I put more sources than I need, and you can eat them and learn them at will. We're not going to go through all of them in the next little time we have together. Number two, it's a pleasure to be back at Kinloss on this day of inspiration. Thank God it's my third time here, and each time I'm inspired by the numbers of people that come. Number three is, I believe this room is a bit hot, so if you can get those windows open, that would be terrific. If not, we'll manage. Number four, I admit that this year I come back in a bit of a different status than usual. My father passed away 3 months ago, so I come back to you as an orphan, and therefore allow me to dedicate the words of Torah of this year to the memory of my father, Tzvi Meir ben Moshe Yonatan, Hareini Kaparat Mishkavo. Of course, all the jokes and the Narishkeit is my own. Only the words of Torah are dedicated to the memory of my father. The source sheets, when you come in, whoever would like to, we'll be working off the source sheets right by the door. And let's begin. The topic that we have in front of us for the next few minutes that we're going to be together is one that's very close to my heart, because my full-time job is to actually train rabbis and educators and send them out to every corner of the earth in order to outreach to Jews that don't have the gift of Judaism. That's my job in a nutshell. I'm a matchmaker. I match between communities and teachers, communities and rabbis and everything in between. Because I firmly believe that today the biggest and one of the biggest goals is outreach. We're no longer living in a situation where we're prosecuted. We're no longer living in a situation in which we have to be very, very nervous about our very lives. But rather, we're living in a generation where, quite frankly, we can be anything we want. We can be Jewish, we can be not Jewish, and therefore the path to assimilation is very, very easy. And therefore, I believe firmly and strongly that one of the most important goals of our generation is to outreach. And within that goal, my question is, how much will Jewish law bend to in order to allow us to outreach? In other words, can you bend every law in the book in order to outreach to Jews? So first of all, if you look on the first sources on the page, you'll see that this is not a new question. This is a very old question. The Rambam, Maimonides, didn't live in the 21st century. He lived in a different time and a different place. And he writes as follows, and I quote, "V'gam eineini ra'ui la'archit mechalalei Shabbat v'lim ospahem, elo v'karvam ulirzarzam ba'asiyat ha'mitzvot." It's not right, says the Maimonides, to go ahead and to tell a Shabbos violator, hey, you're not wanted. Either keep Shabbos or get out of shul. Either keep Shabbos or get out of my house. Rather, you should try to outreach and bring them closer to Judaism. V'kvar pirshu chazal sha'poshea she'patza b'irtzaneu, k'sheyavo lebet ha'knesset lehitpalel, mekablim oto ve'en nohagim bo min ha'gizayon. We learned in the Daf Yomi yesterday, Daf Lamin Aleph, page 31 in the Choros, that if someone has second thoughts and no longer wants to do something, but then says, hey, I want to come back and be a full-fledged whatever in Judaism, there was different opinions, but the bottom line that we paskin is, you can always do tshuva and come back. And therefore, that being the case, says the Rambam, if someone comes to shul, even though he's a Shabbos desecrator, you should let him in, give him a seat, and open the door to him. Well, that's a very nice, I don't have a problem. Here's my question. Can you bend Jewish law for him? I'll sharpen it. Can you violate Jewish law for him? Now I'll sharpen even more. Can you desecrate your own Shabbat in order to save a Jew from assimilation? The answer is no. You would have asked me, I'd say no. You wake me up 2 o'clock in the morning, I say no. It's now 11:25 a.m. I look up a Shulchan Aruch. This is not an obscure source. Code of Jewish law. And what does the code of Jewish law say? Everybody ready? Yes. You're all sitting down. Okay, anyone here heart problems? You ready? Mi sheshalcho lo shehotzi bito mibeito b'shabbat lo hotziya michla Yisrael. You're sitting in shul. Your wife comes running into shul, into the men's section, and says, you don't believe what happened. Well, our daughter, 13 years old, was at home. They took her from the church. They brought her into the monastery. They want to make her Christian. And they took her by force. He's in the middle of shul. So instead of saying for the kiddush and the chillant, what does he do? Says the Shulchan Aruch, mitzvah lasum laderech pe'amav lishtadel ba'atzalata. He goes right ahead and goes ahead and saves her. And starts walking and running, and if need be, even goes into a car and tries to save her. Says the Mishnah Brura, hainu afti yesh b'zeh isur do raita le'ezeh poskim. Even if he violates a biblical law like putting on his car, you have to save that girl from assimilation, from becoming a Christian. And the Shut Shevet HaLevi, we're going into the 20th century, Rav Levi Vosner goes ahead and says, this is not only true if they want to convert her to Christianity, this is generally true. Says the Shut Shevet HaLevi, does anyone know who I'm talking about? Rav Levi Vosner, he is not a modern Orthodox Jew. I don't believe he would feel comfortable in a Mizrahi day of inspiration. And this is what he says. So you understand, he doesn't dress like me. His beard is a bit more thicker, and his suit is a bit more blacker. And this is what Rav Levi Vosner says. Mahu ageder shepikuach nefesh ruchani. We all know what pikuach nefesh means. What's pikuach nefesh? Life endangering situation. What's pikuach nefesh ruchani? Spiritual pikuach nefesh, meaning the person's totally healthy. They run 5 kilometers a day. Their heart is wonderful. They eat right. They look great. Spiritually, they're in a life-endangering situation. What is the definition, says Rav Levi Vosner, of such a life-endangering situation? That's not physical, but spiritual. And once you've established it, what's the ramifications? He answers, look in the Shulchan Aruch I just quoted. If someone wants to cajole you to, on one particular Shabbos, write something on a piece of paper, I can live with that. It's not right. But if there is any sort of a doubt that a person is going to influence a Jew to totally leave Judaism, what is that called in our language with an A? Assimilation. Mutar gam lechalel Shabbat b'melacha d'oraita v'shvil pikuach nefesh ruchani la'atzil nefesh mireda chachat. For spiritual life-endangering situations, you can violate Shabbos. So, if someone's about to assimilate into Christianity, get into your car, save them. Talk to whoever needs to be spoken to. Be it from the Prime Minister down to every single member of Parliament, and get them out of that monastery. If it's on Shabbos, it's on Shabbos. Clear. Now comes my question. Well, we found a Haredi, ultra-religious posek that says so. The Shulchan Aruch says it. The Mishnah Berurah says it. Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Chafetz Chaim. Anyone in the modern Orthodox religious Zionist world? Rav Shaul Yisraeli wrote a beautiful article about this topic of pikuach nefesh ruchani, spiritual life-endangering situations, and he basically says, and I quote, yesh lirot zot migidrei pikuach nefesh haklali she'en shum davar ha'omed b'fnei pikuach nefesh u'mitzvah la'atzilo b'chol ha'emtzayim ha'efsharim. A situation in which you know that when a person starts something, it can be on Shabbos, it can be any day of the week, they're on the road to assimilation, you do everything to stop it, including violate biblical laws, including violating Shabbos, to save that person. So just to sum up what we said until now, not only is there a life-endangering situation called physical pikuach nefesh, there is a life-endangering situation called spiritual pikuach nefesh, and we do everything to save a person, even violate Jewish law. Now, as they taught me when I did my first contract to become a rabbi, the devil is in the details, or the details in the devil. I forgot which way it goes. Wait. The devil lies in the details. There you go. Now comes the details. So I understand if they take a girl to a monastery on Shabbos, that's the way to assimilation. I get it. I understand if a person puts on a cross, they're on the way to assimilation. But let's be honest with each other. That's not happening in 2019. What's happening in 2019 are situations where you could say, they may assimilate, they may not. How many people do you know make Kiddush Friday night, love a Shabbos Friday night dinner,
And then Saturday morning, violate Shabbos.
How many people do you know love the Seder night but eat chametz on Pesach? So the devil lies in the details. Let's see various situations where our poskim come along and say, hey, assimilation, we're willing to bend Jewish law. First situation, taking a train to shul on Shabbos. Now, I just want to preface, because I know I'm going to be attacked on this. I was attacked in the past. Rav Moshe Feinstein, everybody heard of?
Yep.
Died in 1986. Rav Moshe Feinstein, he's the one that allowed you to drink milk, even non-Chal of Yisrael. That gentleman who wrote endless responsum did not write this in his responsum books. It's quoted in his name in a book by Rav Pinchas Goldschmidt, one of the two chief rabbis of Moscow, because you can't have one chief rabbi, you have to have two, because there's always a fight. Right? One of the two chief rabbis of Moscow, he's living today. I asked him about this twice. He said 100% authentic. I got it in a letter from Rav Moshe Feinstein. He quotes it in his book called Zikaron Basefer. And he writes, "The Moskva in Moscow, Irab Dolale Elokim, it's a gigantic city. Everyone who was in Moscow knows how big it was. It is. Mekom Yeshuvam Chamesh Ve'esrim Revivot B'nei Yisrael. 25,000 Jews live there." And he goes on to say, in Moscow, the Jews don't live near the synagogue. They live all over town. And now, thank God, communism fell. Synagogues are beginning to sprout up. We're beginning to bring Judaism. And these Jews, no secret, if they don't come to shul on Shabbos, it's going to be very, very difficult to tell them about a Jewish lifestyle. If they don't go to shul on Shabbos and hear the laner make mistakes and everyone scream, hey, you said kasev and not kesev. And if they don't eat cholent after shul in the fishbowls, and they don't schmooze and say how terrible the rabbi's speech is, they're not going to be good Jews. So says Rav Pinchas Goldschmidt, I have a very terrible situation in front of me. What's the situation? I'd like to bring them to shul, but they don't live within walking distance. And he goes on to say, it's not practical to have a shul in every single place where there's Jews, because they're all over the place. It's like if you take London, one Jew lives in Kingston, and one Jew lives in Northwood, and one Jew lives in Cockfosters and Southgate, and the shul is here in Kinloss. What do we do? What's the question he asks Rav Moshe Feinstein? He basically says, if I don't bring him to shul on Shabbos, these Jews will never know what Shabbos is. And I quote, underlined, "Asher lo yadu ben yiminam besmolam ubaim betofkim b'sharei mikdashei me'at ve'rotzim lehenot miziv ha'shchina b'shabbat kodesh." They want to enjoy the sanctity of Shabbos in shul. And they don't know from the right and to their left. What does that mean? They barely know Jewish law yet. They don't know that Shabbos means not only eating kosher, but not warming up food in a forbidden way. The only way to do it is to start bringing them to shul on Shabbos. Here is his question. Anyone been to Moscow? Okay, there's two places in the world that I think the subway system is amazing. And one of them is not where I was born by my accent. Moscow and London. Amazing systems. Moscow has an amazing subway system. Now, true, this was written before the magnetic Oyster card, but you need to buy a ticket. Rav Moshe Feinstein is asked, can I allow these Jews to go on the subway on Shabbos to get to shul? Yes, they're not driving. Someone else is driving. But it's a rabbinic prohibition of hana'ah mima'asei akum, benefiting from a non-Jew doing something for you, meaning the conductor of the train is driving on your behalf amongst many passengers. Can I allow it? Says Rav Moshe Feinstein to Rav Pinchas Goldschmidt, and I quote, "Bekeshel nisiyah berakevet b'yer Moskva sheberusia, hishiv mar savi b'shnat tafshin membet." His grandson says, in 1982, my grandfather answered, "Afilu yesh eze yisur b'davar," even if there's a prohibition involved, which is questionable because the train's going to go anyway, whether you go on it or not. Even if there is a prohibition, "Eng limchot b'yad harotzim linsoa berakevet l'lech lebet ha'kneset l'shmoa tkiyat shofar v'litol ulave et klog v'lechol basuka v'ein lahagid me'uma kenegdam." Don't say a word. Don't talk about it. Let him do it. Meaning, on the one hand, he's saying, don't make it public and say to everyone, use the subway. On the other hand, if they use the subway, look the other way. Why? Ta'adif shehiyu yehudim sheyesh lahem tikshitkashrut letorah u'mitzvot. It's better that we have Jews that have a link to Judaism than to reprimand them for not keeping Shabbos. I quote again, it's better we have Jews that have a link to Judaism
and to reprimand them for doing things that are wrong. Now, I don't have to tell you, this particular tshuva actually played out today in Moscow. There are many religious Jews. They live near synagogues. They started their path with going on the subway. And Baruch Hashem, thank God, this tshuva, actually, we know how it ended up. There's a question I saw. Hand up.
Instead of the train, we're talking about cars. Mm-hmm.
So, driving, I'm pretty sure that in this particular case, it would be exactly like we said before. Namely, do we define going to shul on Shabbos or not going to shul on Shabbos as the path to assimilation? Or do we say, listen, you can be a good Jew without going to shul on Shabbos? That's the question. Now, I didn't know Moscow in 1982. It could very well be. If you didn't go to shul on Shabbos, goodbye Judaism. There was no Judaism. We're talking about communist Russia. This is before the fall of communism. So to do a biblical prohibition, you'd have to establish 100% it's a path to assimilation. This is a rabbinic prohibition, minus, because you're not driving. Albeit, everyone in the room would agree, this is not in the spirit of Shabbos. Namely, and no rabbi would allow it, just like that. But listen to the words he uses. Better a link to Judaism to reprimand them for doing something wrong. Maybe it is wrong to use a subway, but better they come to shul. Yes.
And is that the case if they specifically ask the rabbi if they're allowed to take a trip, or just the rabbi shouldn't say anything?
So in this case, Rav Moshe Feinstein said, don't say anything. But, indeed, Rav Pinchas Goldschmidt said it was another way of saying, not just look the other way, but if they do ask you, you would say, try to minimize your Shabbos your desecration of Shabbos. For example, there's no Eruv in Moscow, so therefore, how do you carry your ticket? So I know for a fact that many Jews were told by the rabbis in Moscow, sew it into your jacket. Okay? Now what happens at the first of the month? The first of the month, you have to sew too, because Friday night is the 30th, and Shabbos is the first. I know for a fact people told me they sewed two onto their jackets.
The other way of doing that, which I know somebody in Berlin, which say the gay, you can walk in and out and he can't get to Jew without doing it, is he wears it on his Shabbos belt.
For example, now again, no one in their right mind would say, okay, the way to build a community is to have subways, everyone can live wherever they want, and come to shul with the subway. We're talking about an extreme situation where there's assimilation versus getting close to Judaism, and the subway happens to be the way to go. That's Rav Moshe Feinstein. Now let's go to a different world. Let's go to Germany. The Melamed Lahoi. His real name was not Melamed Lahoi. His mother did not call him, I teach in order to make efficient. That's Melamed Lahoi. He didn't say, Melamed Lahoi, clean your room. What was his real name? Rav David Zvi Hoffman, Posek in Germany. Here's the question. Ktanim, students, sheholchim lebeit sefer hanikra, gymnasium, lilmod sham chochmot atzrichot bizmanenu lefar nasa. Students are obligated to go to school 6 days a week, including Shabbos, in order to learn the studies they need in order to make a living later in life. Very much like today. You need a high school degree to get to university, and eventually afterwards, you will get a job. If you don't do that, the job will be a job that probably will not make a good living. Ask Rav David Zvi Hoffman, what should we do? Should we tell all the students that have to go to school on Shabbos, don't go to school on Shabbos, which means you will not have a good livelihood, which is another way of saying to be Jewish is a bad idea, bad investment, because you will not have a good livelihood, or not. Here's what Rav David Zvi Hoffman answers. Going to school on Shabbos, going to school on Yom Tov, middle of the week, it happens a lot. There's no Jewish school, and they're not closed for the weekday holidays. Says Rav David Zvi Hoffman, Tchila daber im mutar l'tamidei gymnasium, lech l'gymnasium b'shabbat. First of all, there's two points of view. If you're allowed to learn on Shabbos anything that's not Torah-oriented. He's willing to be lenient on that point, and quite frankly, we're all lenient on that point. How many people in this room don't read a newspaper on Shabbos because it's the Holy Sabbath? Thank you. No one put their hand up. So he says, on that level, it's okay, and especially since there's two points of view, I'm not worried about what they learn. Now comes the real issue. They're going to school on Shabbos. Imagine putting on their school uniform and going to school like it's a regular day of the week. What are we supposed to do? So if you would have asked me, I would have said, no, take him out of school. But Rav David Zvi Hoffman says, if you take him out of school, you're basically saying, being religious is not only not attractive, it's going to ruin my life. I won't make a livelihood later. Turn the page. He says that they should go to school on Shabbos. And if you say,
Shai Yisrael Yiskolo Melamed La'atzmo. With due respect, let the Jew go ahead and get a tutor, and they'll make up Saturday night whatever he missed in school. Answers Rav David Tzvi Hoffman. Listen to this. Rav Yisrael ba'avonoteinu harabim aniyim ve'en yadam maseget. Most Jews can't afford a private tutor in Germany in those years. We're talking about the late 1900s, early 20th century. Most Jews can't afford having a private tutor. They're poor. So what are you going to do? You're going to tell the Jews that are rich, get a private tutor, don't go to school on Shabbos? And those that are not rich, go ahead and say, go to school on Shabbos? Everyone should go to school on Shabbos. Now comes my favorite. Da'afiru mishi yadol masekit diskolo melameh chiskor ibeno mashevitel b'shabbat. And even if one person says, I have the money, I'll put up the money, and not only will I teach my students, meaning my children, I'll teach other students. Says the Malamid La'olil, it's better they go to school. Why? Look at the bold line. Yoter she'yirbu talmidei b'nei Yisrael she'en kotvim b'shabbat, yoter v'yoter techazakna yedehem, ve'ish et achiv yazoru le'areyo yomar chazak. Anyone want to translate? These are the good kids, the religious kids. They're going to school with kids that are semi-religious, not so religious, very traditional. Says Rav David Tzvi Hoffman, yes, you have the money to go ahead and to get a tutor to teach them. And maybe you'll get a tutor to teach all the religious kids in your neighborhood. But what's going to happen in school then? Who's going to be there? The semi-religious kids. They're not the quasi-religious kids. It's better that these religious kids go to school for what? To teach the non-religious kids how to go to school halachically on Shabbos. Namely, how to go to school and not do what?
Not right.
Not right. Now imagine, you're telling kids, go ahead, give up your regular Shabbos observance, which is get up late on Saturday morning, go to shul, eat chulin, complain about the rabbi, complain about the length of services, complain about the air conditioning being too high or too low. Give up all of that and go to school like it's a regular day. Why? Not because you have no choice. You do have a choice. You can get a private tutor. But because you can teach the non-religious kids how to go to school and still keep Shabbos. And therefore he adds at the end of the response, and let's see what the people do. Many, many religious Jews in Germany, not only did they go to school, they became more religious because of it. Imagine one day of the week they come to school and say, we can't write today. We're here, we can't write today. Their religion became stronger, and they even got others to come with them. So, we started with using a subway, and now we got into going to school. Why? Not because they're going to lose anything, but to influence the other children. And thank God it paid off, said Rav David Tzvi Hoffman. Question?
It's only if you've got sufficient Jews going to school.
Correct.
Because when I went to school, and we had school on Saturday, it wasn't Germany, it was France, I was the only Jewish kid in the class. So it was going to influence me.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. This is a case where many are going,
yes,
but not everyone's on the same religious level.
And also, was it the law to go to school
every day
of the week? So
it wasn't a law.
So if you go to school, you break the law?
He says it's not a law. He just said that if you don't go to school, you won't be able to get a university degree. You won't be able to make a livelihood,
right,
which he felt was strong enough to go. Make a long story short, he says, just to make it clear, you should have an early minyan in shul for those kids. They should daven, make kiddush, and then go to school, and they'll feel Shabbos. And then they'll influence the other children. There was a question, someone in the back, yes.
According to that logic further, then why, according to that logic, we shouldn't be sending kids to a foreign school, because rather they should go to public school
and influence the
Jewish kids are not going to just.
Okay. That's a lecture for another time. Basically, that's a lecture for another time. I have a lecture prepared on it. Is it better to go to a Jewish school than versus going to a non-Jewish school and influencing the Jewish kids there? I admit that it's a very, very loaded question. I'll just say that the lecture I have starts with the first thing they tell you when you get on the airplane. Does anyone actually listen to those safety videos at the beginning? So I never did in all my travels, but I once traveled with my kids and my son listened to it and he started asking me questions. So I had to listen to it to answer his questions. And there was a beautiful line there. if the air in the plane goes down, first put the mask on yourself and then on your children. Why? Because if you don't, you'll both suffocate. The question is, are the children strong enough to go to a non-Jewish school and influence others, meaning the mask is on themselves, or not? And if so, at what age? But that's a whole lecture into itself. Yes?
The role that gave the hat on, is that an opinion that covers the whole of... Did everyone follow that, or was that a minority opinion, or was that
He was a big Posek in Germany, Rav David Zvi Hoffman, and he wrote it in his responsum. It was for everyone. It wasn't just for his community.
And my next question is, you know, many years, you hear that when the Yidden came from Poland and Russia, they started a job on a Monday, and by Friday, when Shabbos came in, they quit.
Right.
Because and they started a job on a Monday.
That's right.
Now, I can see the differences between education and the kids going to help other kids, but how would that rabbi be able to, how would he, if you can put that situation, Paskin, would there be a heter for anyone on a Friday to be allowed to open Shabbos? Because A, they're not helping anyone else, B, there's no other consequence other than negativity towards help Shabbos. And thirdly, if there was a heter, some would say, well, and I hear coming from a family, coming from a Baal Teshuva background, many people say, well, we had to, what people say, and
it's hard for me.
People say, well, we have to chance to earn a living, which I look back and think, how can that, that's a response that to me now is so alien. How would that rabbi put that into the context?
I believe that in those situations you have to really judge, was it first of all life endangering? If you don't go to work on Shabbos, your family is going to go hungry. Number two is, if you did go to work on Shabbos, how many violations of Jewish law did you do, if at all? If putting the spirit of Shabbos, which definitely was ruined, was there more? In the two cases we saw, Subway, maybe not so much of a prohibition, but definitely not in the spirit of Shabbos, because the Subway goes anyway. Going to school on Shabbos and not writing? Again, you're walking to school, you're walking back. Your case is actually violating Shabbos to make a living. And indeed, I can't judge because I wasn't living at that time, but there were endless Jews that felt it was really, either we work on Saturday, or forget it, the Hashkama Minyan, the early Minyan, didn't start with the most religious Jews, it started with the Jews that went to work on Shabbos. It morphed into the opposite. The ones that don't want to hear the rabbi's speech, and don't want to hear the chazan, they go to the early Minyan. And then they learn. It used to be the Jews that went to work. Now let's see a third case. The case is a real case because I know the people involved. In Barranquilla, Colombia. Have you heard of it? Make believe you did. I also never heard of it until I read this chupa. It's one of our graduates from the Strauss Amiel Institute. He basically said, I'm in a shul, my president's Jewish, his wife had a conservative or reform conversion. I have been very successful in trying to bring this family closer and closer to Judaism, and now this boy is 13. Can I give him a bar mitzvah in the shul? And I can't fake out the father and say, it's okay, a bar mitzvah means opening the ark. Or a bar mitzvah means wrapping the Torah. This kid knows what a bar mitzvah is. He sees all his friends getting called up to the Torah and reading things in Hebrew that no one understands. Can I do a bar mitzvah for this child? The father's Jewish. They're getting closer to Judaism, but albeit... Good golly, the kid is not Jewish because the mother went through a conservative or reform conversion. And Shuk Mareah Bazak out of Eretz Chemda.
Before or after the child was born, did she convert?
In this case, it doesn't make a difference because from our perspective, the boy is not Jewish. Answered Shuk Mareah Bazak, which is coming out of Eretz Chemda. It's out of Rabbi Israeli today in the head of the Institute is Rav Carmel. They write explicitly that we don't recognize conservative and reform conversions. However, since you're trying to bring this child closer to Judaism, this is what I suggest you do. Call him up for maftir and let him read the Haftorah. Now you understand the trick involved? They already read the seven aliyahs. Let's say last yesterday, Parshat Emor, they read the seven aliyahs. Maftir is just going over what you already read. Question, so you already read it. They're going to read it again. The Baal Korah can read the Torah anytime he wants. He can read the Torah right now. We can take out a Torah and read it without the bracha. Now, can we make a bracha on the Torah on a Sunday? No. What's that called? Using God's name? In vain. This poor boy, we want to bring him closer to Judaism, but at this point, is he obligated in the mitzvah of not using God's name in vain? Not yet. He's not obligated to dip the apple in honey, and he's not obligated in the mitzvah of using God's name in vain. call him up for maftir and let him read the Haftorah. Because maftir, as you know, is something that even a little boy, namely under bar mitzvah, can read. And that's the way you do a bar mitzvah. Now, they could have very easily said, let him open the ark, let him say anim zmirot, you know, one of those quasi answers. They said, no, we know this boy. Either you can't fake him out, either he gets a real bar mitzvah, or his path to Judaism is finished. Now, I thought this is crazy. Guess what? Turn the page. Out of the Beit Din in Israel, I can't say names, I smudged it, but I know the people involved. Same situation, not in Barranquilla, Colombia, but in Brazil. Same situation, a dayan in the court in the state of Israel said do exactly the same thing. And the chief rabbi of Israel at the time, Rav Amar, said maybe it's a good idea that someone should say the brachot together with him. Barechu et Hashem hamvorach, and this way we're okay. But the bottom line is, for the sake of outreach, let's stretch Jewish law as much as possible. Namely, if a boy under bar mitzvah can read the Haftorah, even a boy that's not even Jewish can read the Haftorah, and we won't lose from it. That's bombastic, gentlemen and ladies. That already is wow.
So can you call him after without
doing
the Haftorah?
Can you call him? Yeah. Someone else can read the Haftorah, but here, as I said, the boy can't be faked out. He knows what maftir is. He knows bar mitzvah means reading in Hebrew. And the only way to bring him close to Judaism is to say, come to Judaism, start keeping Shabbos, start keeping kosher, come, get a bar mitzvah. He knows what a bar mitzvah is. This is the way. Now, again, Jewish law has its limitations. No one said to call him up for a regular aliyah. Absolutely not. No one said he can read one of the seven aliyahs. No. Maftir, Haftorah. With the brachot, because the funny thing is, this is the irony, he's not Jewish, so let him say God's name in vain. No big deal. That's the irony of the irony. What? I believe yes, because he's not saying anything wrong. He's doing something that's totally right. If you say, Baruch Ata Hashem, blessed be you God, I can say amen to that. That sounds good. If he said, blessed be you God, I can't stand you, I wouldn't say amen. But if he says, blessed be you God, you're the true God, like we say in the Haftorah, yeah.
Question. How do we know... I forget from a halakhic point of view, but how do we know he's saying a bracha in vain? He may be saying a bracha with kavana.
Absolutely.
With his kavana.
Absolutely. Just from our perspective, because he's not Jewish, he's not supposed to say the bracha. If he was Jewish, and it wasn't a day that you're supposed to read the Torah, it would be a bracha in vain. Like right now, if I said the brachas on the Torah. He's not Jewish. It is a day we're supposed to read the Torah, albeit he's not Jewish. So if you say, wait a minute, he's not obligating reading the Torah, maybe it's a bracha in vain. We're saying, so what? He's not Jewish. But we're bringing him closer to Judaism. Yeah?
I understand it, and I think it's absolutely great, and the answer is great. But what happens if the parent is so committed, the child is so committed? Well, actually, I would like to do more than not doing it. How are you going to deal with that one?
Very difficult. Very difficult. There are other means to deal with it. As I said, I hinted to it before. Opening the ark, Anim Zmirot, and other things like that. Right. Well, here I think it is absolutely amazing because they went to the far, far, they stretched Jewish law, the elastic waist, not breaking it and saying we're going to the end. He can read the Haftorah. You should know many didn't agree with it. Rav David Stav, who's not exactly one that I suspect to be too ultra-Orthodox, did not agree with this tshuva. He quoted it. He said it exists. I don't agree. How can you? Haftorah should be read by someone that's obligated, not a 13-year-old boy that's not Jewish. But as you can see, there's another example of stretching the elastic waist. Now let's see two more examples because it's going to be fascinating now.
If the bar mitzvah boy's father is not halachically Jewish, i.e., his mother had a converted mom, and he said, "Well, my son's bar mitzvah, I want shlishi, I want to be."
Who wants shlishi?
The boy's father.
The boy's father is not Jewish. The boy's father that's not Jewish. That's already beyond the halachic elastic waist. We do have limitations. So this is the topic of our share. How much can we bend? How much can we stretch? One more question and we'll see two more examples.
Surely by bending this much in the Jewish boys basically think he's
now
become a Jewish adult. Surely that sets him off with so many issues. Like if and when he wants to get married.
Correct.
And he's like, oh, well, my rabbi gave me a bar mitzvah. He obviously thinks I'm Jewish. Like, how do you deal with that?
That's a very good question. What do we do a day later? And that's a very good question, and we deal with it all the time. How do we ensure that on the one hand we bring them closer to Judaism, and on the other hand we don't ruin it for everyone else, albeit everyone else that says, well, he looks Jewish, he got a bar mitzvah like everyone, maybe I can marry him. I will say the bottom line. If he's getting closer to Judaism, by that time hopefully he'll convert and he'll be a Jew. If it doesn't work, it won't be relevant because he basically never converted and he won't come to you to officiate at his wedding. That's the black and white answer. Yeah.
If the father is not ethnically Jewish, is he going to want to go to an Orthodox shul anyway?
What's amazing is that there are places where, yes, the rabbi's a sweet guy. He tries to outreach this family, and they come to an Orthodox shul. And I know cases that happened to me as well. Father not Jewish, mother Jewish. The kids were Jewish. And he had no problem coming to the synagogue, sitting separately from his wife, very strange and alien to him, because he liked the synagogue, the people.
I'm talking about somebody who's converted, but reformed or whatever.
Right.
You're talking about that as well?
No, in this case he was totally not Jewish.
Oh, right.
But he was getting closer to Judaism. Allow me to say two more examples. Okay, there's a famous case of the Ramah where he did a wedding on Shabbos. I'm sure you know about it. To make a long story short, Friday they were supposed to have a wedding. Jews were poor, and ultimately they made a wedding on Friday, so Friday night meal would be both the wedding meal and the Sheva Bracha Shabbos. This way they saved money. What happened was on Friday there was a big debate between the in-laws, as in-laws are prone to do, fight, about how much money we're giving the couple. And the debate went into Shabbos. Eventually at 12 o'clock midnight Friday night, they came to a truce. Rav Moshe Iserlish, known as the Ramah, quoted in the Code of Jewish Law next to Rav Yosef Karo, did the wedding on Shabbos. Everyone said, oh my gosh, he became a Reform rabbi. He went off the path. And here's how his tshuva starts. Vashmach harai kol rash gadol. Anyone remember where that's from? We said it in the davening today. But literally it means, I heard a big loud voice, meaning they're screaming and yelling at me. Lomar, habitu acharei Moshe. Watch out for this Moshe fellow. By the way, this Moshe fellow is what we call Code of Jewish Law. But then they called him this Moshe fellow. He did a wedding on Shabbos. He's not going to get married on Shabbos. Why did he do a marriage on Shabbos? On Yontiv, not getting married is a biblical prohibition. On Shabbos, it's rabbinic. Why? You might write. Why did he do it? He said, a couple was supposed to be married. There was a big fight between the in-laws. Eventually, they get to a truce. If I don't marry them now, the whole Shabbos in front of us. Let's take an English Shabbos. It ends at 9:48 p.m. There's a lot of time to fight again. I better get this wedding off the ground now. Now, how did they write a ketubah? I'm pretty sure he got a non-Jew to write the ketubah. Now, we do not marry people on Shabbos because we might write. In extreme circumstances, he allowed it. Next extreme circumstances. Rabbi Ovadia Yosef is confronted with the following issue. Man and woman, very far from Judaism. Eventually, the woman becomes closer to Judaism, marries a beautiful, nice, Orthodox boy. The Orthodox boy that was married has, with this woman, a baby boy. From his perspective, it's a bechor, firstborn. What do you do 30 days after he's born? Pidyon HaBen. This woman comes to Rabbi Ovadia Yosef and says, I only have one problem. I had 5 miscarriages with all the men I slept with before I became religious. Do I tell my husband or not? You know Rabbi Ovadia Yosef postens? I quote, don't say a thing. Why? We want more people to be religious. If you start opening your mouth, then there goes this marriage. There goes the Judaism of this woman. And he ends, Gadol kvod abriyot shedoche lo ta'aseh shabbat Torah. The dignity of the human being, in this case the dignity of the woman, is far greater and far more important and paramount and germane than it is for to do a prohibition. And which prohibition is involved in a pidyon haben? Having a party? No problem there. What's the prohibition? Giving 5 slime to the Kohen? All right. No big deal. You say a bracha. A bracha. Rav Ovadia Yosef says, saying a bracha is a lo ta'aseh, is a rabbinic prohibition, bracha in vain. These are Jews here, but it's only rabbinic. For kvod abriyot, the dignity of this woman in this marriage, it's doche, a rabbinic prohibition. So don't say anything and do the pidyon haben, for sake of outreach. Last question, true story, I know the people involved. I'll just say it's a South American community. There, the rabbis do weddings, even if the wedding's not kosher. They do the wedding, they leave. This rabbi convinced the couple. 1 minute. This rabbi convinced the couple to do the wedding kosher. It took him a long time. He got a caterer to put down the price and whatnot. They eventually, it all came down to this. We're willing to do the wedding. We're willing for it to be kosher. One condition. Dessert has to be milchik. Dessert has to be milchik. Fleishik wedding, dessert has to be milchik. The caterer, the rabbi, everyone got involved and said, hey, listen, with due respect, we have good parva ice cream. We have good parva cakes. We live on it. The couple said, listen, either we have the dairy cake that I like, or no Jewish wedding, no kosher wedding at all. You can be the rabbi, do whatever mumble jumble you want under the chuppah. Everyone's eating treif. Treif versus serving a milchik dessert after a fleishik meal. If you would have asked me, I'd say, hey, either they shape up or ship out.
Go Dutch, wait an hour.
Go Dutch. The answer this gentleman got from Avshabtai Rappaport. Avshabtai Rappaport is the head of the Beit Medrash in Bar Ilan University today. He is the grandson-in-law to Rav Moshe Feinstein. He wrote, and I quote, Tamheni o kvot tarato. I'm very surprised at your question. Al shaloi skir divrei Ramah, because the Ramah, remember the Ramah? Ramah in the Code of Jewish Law says that there are few Rishonim that say, Lahatir le'echol chalav acharei basar, kishevichu b'chat amazon, kinchu et hayadayim, v'hitichu et hapeh. Forget about Dutch. Forget about an hour. Bench, wash your mouth, wash your hands, and you can eat milchik. So he says, we don't paskin this way. We all know when we teach our kids about milchik and fleishik. You got the 1 hour, the 3 hour, the 6 hour. We don't paskin this way. But in this case, where it's Jewish and kosher wedding versus a milchik dessert, let's take out of the draw elastic ways of the halacha, this point of view, in order to ensure not only a kosher wedding, but a Jewish wedding. And he says, how did you forget that? And the answer is, of course I forgot it, because we all know, 1 hour, 3 hour, 6 hour, that's the way we all are. But quite frankly, says Rav Shabtai Rappaport, there is another view, it's in the Code of Jewish Law, it's not in some obscure source. Maybe it was only written for this situation. And I'll end with the following note. There are points of view in halacha that I see sometimes, we don't paskin like, and I always think maybe it was just written for this situation. And I'll end with something far less far-reaching than what I talked about today. This past Pesach, I was a rabbi in a hotel program that I committed to before my father passed away. The general minhag is that someone in mourning does not daven on Shabbos and Yontif, but I committed to it, and I was already in. There is a point of view of the Rambam that says if you're in mourning, comes Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, you're not in mourning, not even privately. We paskin like the Ramban, privately it continues. I absolutely thought of the Rambam, and I said, you know what, maybe he just wrote that for me, in this situation. Now forget about me, that's me. These points of view were written years ago. Maybe they were just written for these situations, where it's outreach and closer to Judaism versus assimilation, and that's why we utilize them. Thank you all for listening. Have a wonderful day. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.